people don't talk enough about of what a poet you are with your language in 451, and your love of description, your love of smells. And some people have hinted at that you really are essentialist underneath it all.
Well, you know, along the way, out of high school in my early 20s, I went to the library or went to the bookstore, and I bought books on the senses. I bought books on seeing. I bought a wonderful book on the sense of smell and another book on the sense of taste, because I knew that you don't convince people logically, you convince them through the senses. And a lot of times you can convince people of something that's completely untrue if they can touch it, huh? And it's their own truth, their own smell, their own taste. And so I educated all of my senses. And then I was in the theater, and I learned from Shakespeare and all the great playwrights that in the important moments, it's not the drama that gets people, it's the prologue coming to the center of the stage and saying to you, do you know where you are? You're England's here and France is over there, and the rival armies are clashing here, the flags are flying, the horses are printing the earth there, and the battle is on, you know. And the prologue tells you what's happening. There's nothing on the stage, huh? Nothing on the stage. So when I met Charles Laughton later, and he became my friend and teacher, wonderful man. I'd seen Don Juan in Hell, the Shaw play, on the stage in 1950. One of the greatest evenings in the theater ever created, with four people reading from four books, supposedly, on the stage in front of you, Laughton and three others, you know. And but I remembered that, and finally I had a chance to write Fahrenheit 451 as a play from Charles Laughton and Paul Gregory, his producer. Well, I copied the novel much too closely. You can't do that. If you write something for the stage, you've got to swim over your novel like a fish repollinating the eggs, huh? Okay. So, but I didn't do that. I copied from the book. And so Charles Laughton and Mr. Gregory took me out one night and got me very drunk and told me how bad the play was. Well, wasn't that sweet of them to do that? Get me prepared, lots of martinis, and then zing, through the heart. Well, I walked home crying, you know, tears pouring down my cheeks, because I wanted to work for Mr. Laughton in the worst way. And then later, Charlie Laughton came to the house with Elsie, his wife, and we had a little tract house over near Westwood, and we had two children at the time. And Charlie came over and said, do you have an idea for a little operetta? I want to do a science fiction operetta for Elsa to play in, with James Whale, the director of Frankenstein, to do the sets for us. And I told him an idea I had for a little science fiction operetta. So I began to go over to Mr. Lawton's house and meet his wife and work on this operetta. Well, I became a student because Mr. Laughton would stand on his hearth and lecture me about theater, huh? And he taught me Shakespeare, and he taught me George Bernard Shaw. I didn't really know Shaw that much, but it became a love affair that's lasted the rest of my life. But standing there on the hearth, Mr. Laughton said, never forget, Ray, that you're a poet. Again, here we go. He didn't know that Mr. Huxley had said the same thing. He said, when in doubt, come to the center of the stage and do the moment of truth. And he said, you know what I'm talking about. I said, yes, because I suddenly remember when I was a kid lying on the porch on summer nights with my father and my grandfather and uncles there, and they'd begin to talk. And if the talking died down a little, sometimes I'd say, winter, 1910. And my father would then say, oh, yeah, I remember. I was on my sled going downhill, and there was a freight train, and I went right under the freight train, and the wheels missed me. I came out the other side on my sled, and if he hadn't, I wouldn't have been born, you know. So learning to give hints of time to people and letting them speak the moment of truth. And once they begin to talk, it becomes a kind of rough poetry, huh? Rough. If you're smart, the good thing about going on trains is the moment of truth. You don't get it when you're on a jet. You don't talk that much to the people who are sitting next to you. But on a train, you got 3 days crossing the country. You have breakfast, lunch, and dinner with various people. Maybe you wind up with a lumberman from Oregon. You never want to travel with a lumberman from Oregon, but you're having breakfast and lunch and dinner with him and his wife and his kids. So what you learn to do is shut your mouth and say to him, tell me about yourself. You don't put it that bluntly, but what's it like? What's going on with lumber or with prices, unions or whatever? And then let him talk, huh? And then he begins to do the moment of truth, huh? It's in all of us. We all want to talk about ourselves. What was your childhood like? What was your grandfather like? Where do you come from? What kind of winters did you have, huh? What did you do at Halloween, et cetera, et cetera? So all of this, Mr. Lawton opened up in me, and he says, when you write your plays, don't forget the moment of truth. So when I did my first plays 7 or 8 years later at the Cornet Theater, if you go see them, you'll find the moment of truth is always in there, and there's a moment when the lead character comes to the center of the stage and looks to the audience and paints a picture on the audience's faces. I've got a wonderful play called The Chicago Abyss, where there's a man who remembers and speaks, but he doesn't do great moments of truth. He does mediocrities. He remembers what an orange peel was like. He remembers what Prince Albert in the Tin was like. He remembers Milky Ways and Clark Bars and Butterfingers. But he's a danger to society, you see. He's not saying literary truths, but nevertheless, he's making people remember the past. So he's a danger to the totalitarians there because those things don't exist. And he's making people dream and want them to exist again. He wants them to think about coffee and chocolate and old movies and all these things that are gone in a dead city. And so I did a play about him. The whole thing is a monologue. The whole thing is a moment of truth. Huh? And Harold Gould came out and did it on the stage for me. And it's one of the great performances. And he's been part of my life ever since.